This podcast discusses domestic violence, criminal behavior, murder, and adult themes. While not explicit, listener discretion is advised. Summer had its claws in Salt Lake City. September sun scorched the pavement. The noontime heat made the air appear to wobble. Jeff Lewis stepped into his truck, a red GMC Sierra pickup, outside of his office in an industrial park south of Salt Lake City International Airport. He knew the lunch hour traffic would be bad on the Bangor Highway, so he opted to take a back road south toward the 201 freeway. Jeff's route took him down Gramercy Road to 1820 South, then to an intersection with Bangor just north of the 201 on-ramp.
Just before I got onto Bangor at the intersection, I was sitting at a red light with one vehicle in front of me, and it happened to be a little minivan.
A blue 2005 Chrysler Town & Country. Both the minivan and the GMC were in line, waiting to make right-hand turns onto the southbound lanes of Bangor. The light turned green.
And the minivan started to pull forward and turn right, and so I naturally looked left as I was pulling forward, and I ran into the back of the minivan.
The Town & Country minivan had come to a full, unexpected stop. The GMC hadn't been moving all that fast, but its front bumper did hit the van's lift gate.
I was just thinking, what are you doing? The light was green, you were going right, and then you slammed on your brakes. What were you doing? You know? And, I was upset too.
The minivan did not budge. It hung halfway out into the rightmost lanes of Bangor Highway, frozen. A surge of frustration went through Jeff as it became clear the minivan was not going to pull over.
I pulled around him and then pulled onto Bangor and pulled over to the right, and he pulled up behind me.
Jeff put his truck in park, pulled out his phone, and dialed 911.
Instantly, my first instinct was to call the cops. Been in a little fender bender, didn't know what really was going on. The guy was kind of acting weird by not really getting out of the way of traffic. We weren't really even going very fast, maybe 3 to 4 miles an hour.
A dispatcher took Jeff's information as he walked around the front of the pickup.
It wasn't really any damage to my truck. A couple little scrapes on the front bumper, nothing big.
The dispatcher told Jeff a trooper would head his way. He ended the call and glanced over to see the driver of the minivan walking toward him.
He kind of gave off this really weird vibe by the way he approached. It was kind of like he was a little bit standoffish, just a little bit different, not like a normal person.
The minivan driver stuck out his hand as if he wanted to shake Jeff's. He introduced himself at the same time. "My name," he said, "is Josh."
I actually told him, "I've just called the cops. I'd appreciate it if you stay over there by your van. And I'm calling my insurance right now." And he said, you've called the cops." And I said, "Yeah, they're on their way. They'll be here anytime."
This is a bonus episode of Cold, the Car Crash Con. I'm Dave Cawley. Back after a word from our sponsors.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
You can power up your playtime with the Nintendo Switch system, the home of Mario and friends. You may discover exciting surprises with Mario, Princess Peach, and more in Super Mario Bros. Wonder, or challenge friends to a race in Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, you can head to Nintendo.com to learn more about the Nintendo Switch system. Games and systems sold separately.
Three months before Susan Powell disappeared, Jeff Lewis was involved in a minor fender bender with Susan's husband, Josh Powell.
Something was really off. I didn't feel comfortable with the guy. You know, and rightfully so, I was pretty upset.
Josh had brake-checked Jeff as they were making a right-hand turn from 1820 South onto the Bangor Highway in Salt Lake City on September 2nd, 2009. Jeff had called 911, then his insurance agent.
Meanwhile, I look over and Josh is on his phone and he's walking around, acting like no big deal, kind of over by his vehicle. And then a cop pulled up.
Utah Highway Patrol records show the cop, a state trooper, arrived 6 minutes after Jeff called in to report the accident.
As soon as Josh looked over and saw that there was a cop pulled up, all of a sudden his back started hurting and he kind of started holding his lower back and limping back to his vehicle. And he actually got back into his van on the passenger side. The cop got out of his vehicle, walked up to me and asked me, well, what was that? And I said, I don't know. He was perfectly fine while we were waiting for you.
Jeff told me the trooper warned him if Josh asked for an ambulance, he'd have to call for one. Jeff couldn't believe it.
It wasn't even enough to really, when I hit him, to really make my head whiplash or my neck whiplash or anything like that.
The trooper gave both Jeff and Josh paperwork to fill out. They each wrote out their individual accounts of the crash. Just over 10 years had passed from the day of this crash to the afternoon that Jeff and I sat down for this interview.
You know, and my memory's a little foggy. It's been a little while.
Thankfully, the paperwork from that day a decade ago has survived. I have copies of both statements, and I asked Jeff to read Josh's words.
Josh says that came to a full stop at a red light, pulled forward, and came to another full stop to traffic, got rear-ended. That was it.
Jeff's version of events included a bit more detail.
Mine was in lane waiting to pull out onto Bangor. Car in front of me, pulled forward to go. I looked left and he had stopped. I was only going about 3 or 4 miles an hour. Jumped out to see if he was okay. And he said he was just fine. So, it's a little bit different.
Standing at the side of the highway that day, Jeff could not imagine why Josh would need medical treatment.
And so the cop walks over and probably about 3 minutes later walks back to me and says, well, here comes the ambulance. 5 to 10 minutes later, a fire truck and the ambulance pulls up. They pull him out of the vehicle like he, as if he couldn't even walk. They put him on a stretcher, put him in the ambulance and hauled him away.
Josh ended up at the Granger Medical Clinic in West Valley City that afternoon, where a doctor diagnosed him with a neck sprain.
I talked with the police officer after, and he actually apologized to me and said, you know what, this is right after the recession. And he said, we've seen a lot of accidents. And he goes, I'm not necessarily saying that he purposely caused the accident, but it looks like he did. And we see these kind of accidents quite a bit because, you know, some people can claim, you know, and doctor bills and they are hurt and distressed and get $20,000 to $30,000 off of insurance for a settlement.
Utah court records show Jeff received a citation for following too close. He had to pay a $170 fine.
Went home and I didn't really think anything of it after that.
Until 3 months later, when he spotted a face that seemed somehow familiar on the TV news.
At first, you know, they were talking about the disappearance of Susan Powell and her husband, Josh Powell. I had him on the news, and I said, I know this guy. I know this guy. It didn't hit me right away, but all of a sudden, I was like, I was digging through my stuff, and I found the incident report. And sure enough, it was Josh Powell.
It came as a shock. Jeff realized Josh and Susan Powell lived exactly a mile and a half west of him in a straight line.
What had happened is my insurance called me. It was right around the same time. And they told me that he had claimed that, you know, of course, some vehicle damage. They paid out for that. I want to say it was about $3,000, which honestly, $3,000 isn't much damage. He had a little scrape and a little ding on the back of the van, nothing real serious. They also paid out the ambulance ride.
This is backed up by paperwork. An estimate prepared by Rocky Mountain Collision Repair a week after the crash pegged the cost of fixing the minivan at $2,934.
He also tried to claim pain and suffering, and they did not pay out the money that he was asking for that.
Pain and suffering from a fender bender. A little love tap at less than 5 miles per hour.
And at the time, my insurance agent actually told me that there was other cases that he had been involved that was very similar to the same accident. I don't have any proof on that. That was just what my insurance agent told me.
Jeff didn't have any proof. I do. Let's step back in time and look at Josh Powell's second suspicious car crash. 6.5 years before that rear-end wreck on Utah's Bangor Highway, and 585 miles away as the crow flies, Josh sat at the wheel of a different minivan. This time, it was his 1997 Plymouth Grand Voyager. Susan sat shotgun. They didn't have their boys with them because Charlie and Braden had not yet been born.
They say when you want to have kids, get a dog. But we didn't want a dog, so we got a bird. Yeah. We don't want kids yet, though, either.
Josh and Susan had been married just over 2 years. They were then living in Yakima, Washington, working as live-in managers at a retirement center. This is from a video Steve Powell shot when Josh and Susan first moved into their on-site apartment.
Yeah. Well, you don't want kids until you've been in this place long enough to, you know,
take the experience with us.
Exactly. So, yeah.
On May 12, 2003, the Powell's minivan rolled north along Rudkin Road in the little city of Union Gap, just south of Yakima. Off to the right, traffic whizzed by on I-82. Rudkin, a frontage road, had a posted speed limit of 25 miles per hour.
It wasn't like we were going 60 miles an hour on this road.
Josh wasn't even doing 25 as he crept past the Outback Steakhouse, Best Western, and a truck stop.
And there's no one else on the road at all, no other cars.
Bob Powers was also headed north on Rudkin that afternoon in his 1993 Lexus ES340.
I had come up on him after a turn on the roadway and went, why is he going so slow? There's nobody in front of him. And then, you know, he's obviously lost is what I'm saying to myself. You know, that's what you say to yourself. Obviously lost.
Bob slowed. His focus drifted. Out of the corner of his eye, he spotted an odd-looking home at the side of the road.
For whatever reason, I'd taken a look at the building and happened to notice that, you know, there was, you know, just an ugly roof.
As a real estate investor, Bob had something of an interest in odd properties.
And the minute I looked back, you know, he had stopped. You know, it was very abrupt. And, you know, I didn't understand it at all. No need to be stopping. There's the clear road way ahead, no stoplights, no stop signs. No right or left turn opportunities. There was no reason for him to be stopped dead center in the middle of the road.
Bob's right foot stabbed the brake pedal. It wasn't enough. The Lexus skidded into the back of the minivan.
You know, I think by the time we would have even connected, we had to have been, as I said before, you know, might have been going 5 miles, 10 miles an hour or something. It was got to be slow.
The front driver's side corner of the Lexus hit the van's rear bumper, just right of center.
It just couldn't have been much. It was just a really soft... connection, enough that it surprised you, but not enough that it jolted you.
Airbags did not even deploy in either car. Josh would later describe whipping his head backward against the headrest. Susan lurched forward against her seatbelt. Her muscles tensed. She didn't feel pain, only a rush of anxiety. Concerned, she turned to check on her husband. Josh seemed okay, but maybe a little dazed. Susan popped the buckle on her seatbelt and stepped out of the minivan's passenger door. She checked herself. Nothing seemed broken or even sore. Josh got out of the van as well, as Bob was stepping from the driver door of his car.
Got out of the car and I said, well, we probably should take each other's information and let me call and file a report. So I was actually the one who called the police.
Bob had a few years on Josh, and he wasn't quite sure what to make of this younger man.
I do remember him being just somewhat aloof, didn't seem to be very animated, kind of odd, you know, and I mean, very kind of quiet, didn't really talk much, you know, sort of participated in the information exchange, but didn't really have much more to add to the conversation. So I was actually the one who called the police.
Meantime, they checked their cars for damage.
What I remember is there wasn't much damage at all.
A Union Gap police officer arrived. He looked at the two vehicles, then he wrote up a report. It noted damage to the front driver corner of Bob's car, but no damage of any significance to Josh's minivan. The officer wrote Bob a ticket for following too close.
I was cited for the incident, you know, had a citation written, and didn't feel it was my fault because I felt like it was an abrupt, you know, stop.
All these years later, I found a scanned copy of the officer's report among Josh's personal files. I showed it to Bob.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm.
Josh told the officer that he'd been making a left-hand turn. The officer drew a diagram of the crash based on Josh's description.
I find this interesting, this diagram. They did this to indicate what the individual had said, that he was trying to take a left turn. But this is not true. This cannot be possible. You know?
The area to the left of where Josh had stopped on Rudkin Road was blocked by a cyclone fence and a locked gate surrounding a fruit warehouse. I've been unable to find any indication that Josh and Susan ever visited or had business at that warehouse. That wasn't the only oddity on the police report.
It says no injuries were reported.
No injuries. That makes what happened next even more odd. Josh handed Susan the keys and sat down in the passenger seat. She took the wheel and steered north to Memorial Hospital in Yakima. When they arrived, Susan told the emergency department staff she was fine, but her husband needed an evaluation. Josh went through an exam and x-rays. He received a prescription for ibuprofen and Vicodin. The doctor also told him to take it easy for a few days at work. No heavy lifting, no pouring coffee for the retirement center residents, that kind of thing. Susan awoke the next morning feeling some pain. The adrenaline had worn off and her body ached. But she didn't go to the ER as Josh had. Instead, she stopped by a clinic right around the corner from their work. A tech took some x-rays and nothing seemed wrong. So Susan went home with just some Celebrex, which she never ended up taking. Looking through the records now, it seems that would have been a logical place for this story to end. But it didn't. On the second day after the crash, Josh convinced Susan they needed to see a chiropractor. He had found one in the Yellow Pages. So they went in for an evaluation. Afterward, Josh informed his bosses he couldn't do any physical labor. Doctor's orders. Also, he would be missing a lot of work while receiving treatment. Josh and Susan spent the next month and a half seeing the chiropractor two or three times per week. And that wasn't all. The chiropractor wrote them prescriptions for massage therapy. All of the bills went to Josh's auto insurance. They were coming to the end of their treatments when July 13th rolled around. That was the day Steve Powell confessed his feelings to Susan in the voyeur video recording first revealed right here in the Cold podcast. You might remember Steve had accompanied Josh and Susan to a trucking company in Kent, Washington. Josh wanted to get his CDL and was toying with the idea of working as a trucker.
Well, we're thinking about moving to Colorado, and I thought, of all the things, I want to get a trailer to put our stuff in. I hate moving it in and out of storage.
Right.
And so if I had a trailer, I'd like to have a way to move it without having to hire someone, even if I had to rent the truck.
Right.
In the video Steve shot that day, Josh sat behind the big steering wheel, using his arms and upper body to maneuver the semi. He didn't wince or show any outward sign of pain as he twisted, worked the stick shift, and waved goodbye to his dad.
Later.
Okay, bye.
Yet just 3 days later, Josh pulled out the Yellow Pages again. He believed, according to medical records, that his recovery had plateaued, and he wanted to try a different chiropractor. That meant a new round of evaluations, x-rays, and manipulations. Josh and Susan went in together 3 times a week, just like before. At every visit, the chiropractor billed the insurance for exercise training and neuromuscular reeducation. He even sold Josh on the need for $170 in special pillows and back braces, sending those bills to the insurance as well. Bob Powers, the driver who had hit Josh, had no idea any of this was happening.
But to get treatment for what? Nothing? That's what it seems like.
Bob went to court, fighting the ticket he had received. He brought photos with him, showing tall weeds covering the fence line that Josh was supposedly turning left into.
Well, there was no place where he could have been taking a left turn. It was total falsehood. That's why I went and took photos, is just so I would have whatever information I might need, and went to present it to the judge, and he said, I think we're going to rule in your favor. So so he dismissed the ticket.
Josh and Susan's medical bills kept coming. By August, Josh's auto insurance provider, PEMCO, decided it needed to figure out if all of this was really necessary. The company ordered independent medical evaluations for both Josh and Susan. Josh talked to his chiropractor about it, and he kept notes. Here's what he wrote.
He said we had to sue in order to show a strong effort to get more money, or he would make us pay all of the invalid charges out of our money. He gave me literature to prove that I should. I told him I don't think that is necessary.
The independent medical exams, or IMEs, took place on August 19th, 2003, more than 3 months after the crash. The specialist who did the IMEs described Susan as, quote, very pleasant. He did not use any such language for Josh. I have copies of the paperwork from this IME. On a page listing symptoms, Josh checked boxes for severe or frequent headaches, shaking or twitching in limbs, loss of motion in joints, spine abnormality, and excessive worry or anxiety. Susan put a giant slash across the entire form, as if to say she didn't have any serious symptoms. The IMEs revealed Susan was fine. Although she sometimes had neck stiffness, she didn't require any additional treatment to return to her pre-crash condition. Josh was another story. The specialist wrote Josh was, quote, neurologically and orthopedically intact. But because of his insistent complaints about pain, Josh would probably benefit from 6 more weeks of treatment. PEMCO said Josh would have to pay for the pillows himself. It also denied coverage for the exercise training and neuromuscular reeducation, finding those were unnecessary and not related to the crash. Bob was stunned when I described the extent of the claims to him.
My goodness. I hear it's been, 16 years ago? The first I've heard of it.
Josh argued every detail of the bills with the insurance companies and chiropractors. His own records show he negotiated his portions of the bills down to just fractions of their total amounts. Bob's insurance, State Farm, had quickly paid out $1,300 to replace the dinged rear bumper on Josh and Susan's minivan. Josh hounded State Farm for more. He claimed there were new problems with the minivan that cropped up after the crash, like bald tires and a malfunctioning door lock. State Farm refused to pay for additional repairs. The negotiation dragged on for months. In the end, State Farm reached a settlement with Josh. It paid out roughly $13,000 to cover medical expenses. Josh pocketed about half, $6,160.
Wow. Good income for a couple of months back then, maybe.
It's fair to raise a question here about Susan's involvement in this claim. I turned to Susan's journal, hoping to find insight about her side of this experience. But there are two pages missing from it. The gap in time spans from March 2003 until August 2003, the exact period of time during which this crash and insurance claim took place. It's also the period of time during which Steve Powell told Susan he was in love with her, and she rejected him. So one could understand why she might not want this story in her journal. The entries that followed the missing pages simply described a desire to escape. Here is what Susan wrote on August 29th, 2003.
Literally every workday we have numerous reminders of why we want to go. Badly. Hopefully soon, our misery can be put to an end. So then we can be living where we want, happy what we're doing, and sooner able to move on, find a job for Josh, and start a family.
All of Josh and Susan's missed work time resulting from the crash had soured their relationship with the owners of the retirement center. They transferred to another center in Olympia at the end of the year, but it didn't help. So in January of 2004, Josh and Susan moved to Utah. They were both unemployed at first, but survived off of that $6,100 settlement check. After a few weeks, Josh and Susan both picked up temp jobs. Josh lost his almost immediately. Susan's temp position did not provide health insurance, so Josh applied for a private plan that February. He listed his occupation as, quote, manager on the paperwork, failing to disclose he was actually out of work and receiving unemployment. He also wrote on the form that he and Susan were both in, quote, great health. He explained away all those chiropractic treatments, saying they were just the result of an auto accident. The agent who handled Josh's application told him she needed records. He argued with her at length. In processing notes, the agent described Josh as, quote, quite difficult to work with. But he did cough up the records eventually. After reviewing them, the insurance company offered Josh and Susan coverage with a 15% markup. Josh did not take that very well. He pushed back, saying he'd only gone through all those weeks of spine cracking on doctor's orders. The agent told Josh they could reconsider the rate in 2 years, provided he and Susan remained healthy. The insurance company viewed it as an already generous offer, the best they could do. He was not happy, but Josh swallowed it. The internal processing notes show only then did the health insurance rep raise the question, what exactly did Josh manage? The agent called Josh to ask, only to learn he was, quote, now between jobs.
Do you ever look up when you're hanging out with your friends and family and realize that every single one of you is on your phone? I can't tell you how often that happens to me. Q Hunt a Killer. It's the subscription game that gets you off your phone and thrusts you and your friends and family into an ongoing murder mystery investigation. It's as if Netflix and an escape room had a baby. It gets you talking and having fun together, whether it's game night or date night or even solo, because you can choose how you want to play. And I like that Hunt a Killer donates proceeds for every box sold to the Cold Case Foundation. My first box came with maps, newspaper clippings, police interviews, and access to a website with all kinds of extras that immersed me and my family in the story. It might be a pretty good gift for the holidays. Right now, just for our listeners, you can go to huntakiller.com and use promo code COLD for 20% off your first box. They even have gift cards for all your holiday shopping, not to mention they are throwing in exclusive bundles for the holiday season. So make sure to use promo code COLD at huntakiller.com for a 20% discount and to show your support for the show. huntakiller.com, promo code COLD.
Late nights at work taking a toll on your skin? Do you find yourself staring at those dark circles in the mirror? Well, it's time to meet your new best friend, Dark Circle Defense Balm from Lumen. Lumen is a line of brilliant men's skincare solutions crafted especially for men who want to look and feel their brightest. Whether you're a seasoned skincare pro or a total newbie, Lumen Skin has got you covered. Lumen's Dark Circle Defense Balm is a lightweight gel that absorbs seamlessly into your skin to brighten your under eyes and instantly plump dehydration lines. It's basically an espresso shot for your eyes. The best part? Lumen will let listeners of this podcast try the product out for free. Yes, you heard that right. Free. Head to lumenskin.com/wondery and get your free trial of Dark Circle Defense and their other amazing products now. Say goodbye to tired-looking eyes and say hello to a new and refreshed you. Don't wait any longer. Your skin will thank you. That's lumenskin.com/wondery for your free trial.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling T-shirts from a booth at your local farmer's market or dishing out handmade crafts online, Shopify's POS system manages it all. Unite your in-person and online business with a trusted platform that supports your retail hustle. Get started with hardware tailored to your needs, from payments on the go to full-scale retail setups, with round-the-clock support to keep your sales smooth as silk. Do the smart thing for retail. Go with Shopify. For a limited time, sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/wondery, all lowercase. Take your business to new heights. Visit shopify.com/wondery today. That's shopify.com/wondery.
Do you ever feel like you're settling? For your foundation, that is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation, and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation.
These two car wrecks, 6 years apart, exhibited a surprising symmetry. Both were low-speed, rear-end collisions caused when Josh Powell came to unexpected stops in front of other drivers. In both cases, the other drivers insisted there was no apparent reason for him to have stopped. Josh claimed injuries from both crashes, in spite of the fact that neither of the other drivers were injured. Josh sought months of chiropractic and massage therapy care following each crash, billing those visits to auto insurance. In both cases, the insurance companies ended up ordering independent medical examinations, which raised doubts about the necessity of the treatments. Twice is quite the coincidence.
And you've indicated that there was some other, at least another one of these kinds of incidents, two other incidents. Wow.
One before, one after.
Wow.
Three times, and it's no longer a coincidence. It's a trend. So let's look at Josh's third suspicious crash. It happened during the summer of 2000.
It was a really nice summer. I was actually content. I was happy the way things were going.
That's Josh's voice from his audio journals. It was 4 months before he met Susan. He had been living with his dad in South Hill, Washington, but had just found an apartment of his own in Tacoma.
So I moved in. It's a really nice apartment, two-bedroom apartment. It was brand new when I moved in.
Josh had a lot going on. He was working long days installing furniture, struggling to stay ahead of his debts.
All told, I think I'm paying out close to $2,000 a month just to live.
He'd made new friends at church and anticipated going back to school that fall. His prized possessions were his computer, his entertainment center, and his Plymouth Voyager minivan.
I might have to let my van go, which is costing me $310 in insurance and payments, which is not much.
On the afternoon of June 8th, 2000, Josh drove that minivan north up Meridian in Puyallup. A young woman named Nicole Lyons was right behind him in her 1998 Jeep Wrangler. Nicole lived in the Puyallup area, but worked out west in DuPont. She took a van pool to work each day, leaving her Jeep in a parking lot near Puyallup's South Hill Mall.
Just right near a little strip mall that used to be a mattress store, for some reason, what's ringing bells.
She'd pulled onto Meridian on her way home that day, only to find traffic backed up.
Afternoon, you know, commuting traffic, I would imagine it was around 5, you know, 5-ish, 5:15 maybe, because that's when I would have gotten back to my, you know, van pool spot and then pulled out onto the road, so that's what I recall.
And come to an immediate stop, as bumper-to-bumper traffic sat waiting for the light at 39th Avenue to change. The car in front of her, Josh's minivan, crept forward. So did she.
Went and thought he was going, but he wasn't.
Nicole's Jeep hit Josh's minivan.
I rear-ended him just ever so slightly. Really, we were going, the miles per hour was like, you know, 2 or 3, maybe. I mean, it was very much, we just started going and then immediately stopped and had impact.
Nicole and Josh each pulled off of the road into a parking lot.
Then he seemed, from what I recall, to be in a hurry.
They checked for damage. By design, the Wrangler's front bumper wasn't entirely flat. It had 2 prongs on it for tow hooks, one of which had hit the rear bumper of Josh's minivan.
I mean, I think there was a little indentation in his bumper from the prong of my vehicle. There was not any damage to my vehicle whatsoever.
They had a quick conversation.
I think there was some talk of, do we even want to exchange information? And we ended up exchanging information.
Josh scribbled Nicole's license plate and phone number on a paper copy of her auto insurance card, which he kept. He also wrote out his own description of the crash. He later scanned both papers into his computer, though Nicole had no way of knowing that.
And I wasn't sure that he was even going to turn it in or file a claim.
It wasn't a big deal, as far as she could tell. No police, no ambulance, no problem.
He seemed completely fine and very, you know, like I said, in a hurry, let's exchange information and get on his way.
The next day, an insurance adjuster came to look at the minivan. He figured the rear bumper cover would need to be replaced at a cost of about $560, parts and labor. Records obtained by this podcast show the actual cost to repair came in below the estimate at $452. Repairs to Josh's body, they cost a good deal more. He started seeing, can you guess, a chiropractor. She wrote Josh had a mild to moderate cervical thoracic strain, or sprain. In other words, neck and back pain. She referred him to a massage therapist to receive 2 massages a week for the next 6 weeks. Josh did not want to pay for this, though, so he called Nicole's insurance, Progressive, and started badgering them for money. Here's what he wrote in his notes.
We talked and I tried to negotiate, but he didn't negotiate at all until I forced the issue. Then he offered $400 cash and $500 medical. I told him that that doesn't even cover the here and now medically.
The day after writing that, Josh went to the office of a personal injury lawyer in Puyallup. He hired the firm on the spot, agreeing to give them a third of anything they recovered from Progressive. Nicole had told her Progressive agent her side of the story.
I also called it into my insurance and talked with them and gave a statement of what happened. And then that was it. I don't remember getting any additional pieces of information from that.
Josh's attorney spent a few weeks gathering up medical records, then sent a demand letter to Progressive. It said Josh had incurred about $1,500 in medical expenses. It also said he deserved $6,500 in general damages. As such, they wanted Progressive to cough up $8,000. A month later, Progressive settled, agreeing to pay out less than half of that amount, about $3,400. That more than covered the medical bills. The attorney took his cut of about $1,100, leaving Josh with a check for $728. Nicole never knew.
Would it surprise you to learn that he claimed injury out of that crash?
Yeah, that would be surprising. I don't remember there being any concern of injury.
All right, with all of that background, now we have to look at the paperwork Josh filed with his car insurance company after the crash on Bangor Highway in Utah back in September 2009. Josh wrote he had whiplash. One of the questions on the form asked if he had previously been treated for, quote, similar symptoms. He checked no.
I actually had no idea that this guy had made any claim whatsoever with my insurance company until you guys had, you know, come up with that information. I thought it was pretty revealing.
Josh's own records prove he had claimed whiplash after the 2003 crash in Yakima when Bob Powers rear-ended his van.
I called my State Farm agent and said, did this really all happen? I mean, did they actually get some kind of payout? And he, of course, told me the extent of the payout. And I says, you've got to be kidding me, Joel. I says, how come there wasn't follow-up by you guys? Because that following too close ticket was dismissed at court. I would think you would have no obligation. And he says, well, we try to take it out of your hands and not have you worry about it whatsoever, and that's why we haven't informed you.
While State Farm didn't share the details of Josh's 2003 claim with Bob, the company did enter those records into a fraud prevention database. They were available to Jeff Lewis's insurance company as it investigated Josh's 2009 claim. The 2009 crash happened 3 months before Susan disappeared. Josh was still undergoing treatment for his injuries when his wife vanished. And in the months that followed, the insurance companies ordered another independent medical exam, which I described in episode 6 of Cold. The paper trail from that IME revealed Josh was diagnosed with a rotator cuff strain or partial tear just 10 days after Susan disappeared. He blamed that injury on the crash, even though there was no mention of it in any of the prior medical records.
Yeah, it was an act. He claimed shoulder injury. When the cop pulled up, he was holding his back. It was all an act.
Again, that's Jeff, the guy who rear-ended Josh 3 months before Susan disappeared.
When I saw him on the news and his wife was missing, my gut feeling was that he was trying to get insurance money. Right away when I see this, I'm going, man, this guy got rid of his wife for money.
On the surface, none of these crashes seem like much. But taken together, they paint a picture of Josh Powell, willing to scam the insurance system for a few thousand bucks. Or, in Jeff's view, maybe $1 million. Susan's life insurance.
And then it comes out that, you know, she did have an insurance policy. And so that's exactly what I thought he did.
I wasn't sure what I would find when I first set out to identify the driver who hit Josh on that September day in 2009. To be honest, I wasn't sure I would ever be able to. There wasn't enough detail. All I knew was someone crashed into Josh's minivan on or near the Bangor Highway. I scoured the West Valley City case files, but came up empty-handed. I checked court records for any case connected with Josh Powell on that date. There weren't any. I submitted public records requests to multiple police departments asking for reports of any crash involving Josh's minivan on or around that date. None had any. It had not occurred to me then that the highway patrol might have jurisdiction. While I wasn't able to identify Jeff, it turned out he was listening to Cold.
My wife actually found it and said, you've got to listen to this, because she knew the little bit of a background of being in an accident with Josh Powell. So she said, you've got to listen to this podcast. they mention you in this. I'm like, they don't mention me. What are you talking about?
Jeff reached out indirectly by leaving a review for the podcast.
On your KSL podcast, I did leave a comment saying, hey, you can reach me. I'm the guy that got in an accident with them. I've been brought up a few times. And that was probably January of this year.
But that comment was soon buried, and I never saw it. Months went by, and season one of Cold came to an end. Still, I couldn't shake the sense that I needed to find this driver. So I turned to social media. In the minutes immediately after the September crash, Josh had snapped a photo from the passenger seat of his minivan. It showed the truck that had hit him, that red GMC Sierra, as well as the other driver. The photo was still on Josh's phone when Detective Ellis Maxwell took it from him the day after Susan disappeared.
I want to see your phone.
Why?
I wanted to see your phone. I'm gonna hang on to it until we're finished.
Okay.
When digital forensics investigators went through Josh's phone with a search warrant several months later, they recovered the picture. But nothing about it raised suspicion.
I mean, I don't think there's ever a sense of urgency to find me. It was, I had a minor brush-in with this guy.
And Jeff didn't come forward on his own back then because he didn't see how his encounter with Josh could have any relevance. He had no way of knowing that Josh had used that crash to obtain a prescription for cyclobenzaprine, a muscle relaxant capable of knocking someone off their feet. He didn't know about Josh's suspicious shoulder injury, or the IME that suggested Josh was scamming the insurance company. I had a copy of Josh's photo, the one from his phone. Over the summer, I uploaded it to Facebook and Instagram, along with a plea for help identifying the man it showed.
My wife actually shot me a picture of me standing outside of my truck. I said, what the heck, where did you get this? And she says, well, it's on Facebook. It's on the Cold Podcast Facebook.
Jeff and I at last connected. He also provided documentation, which I was able to verify as authentic. He was the guy.
But I just, always found it very interesting listening to the podcast, being in an accident with this guy. I followed the case. It's a heartbreaking situation.
When we spoke, Jeff shared feelings of frustration over how the entire situation had unfolded following Susan's disappearance.
I felt like, as a father, that the system had completely let those kids down. There's nothing they could do about Susan, but I feel like those kids could have been saved.
Josh Powell's car crashes and the petty insurance claims he filed pale in comparison to the tragedy of what eventually unfolded in the Powell family. But they help us understand his behavior. With the benefit of hindsight, we can now see the troubling ways in which he attempted to use people. It didn't matter if those people were the strangers behind him in traffic or the two children he shared with the woman he mistreated and likely murdered. If Susan's story sounds familiar in your own life, in other words, if you or someone you know is experiencing domestic abuse in any form, please get immediate help. In the U.S., support is a phone call away at the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233 or online at www.thehotline.org. If you would like to support Cold, please subscribe in your podcast app of choice and consider leaving us a rating or review. All of those help us reach new listeners. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at The Cold Podcast. And we have a website with articles, pictures, and video, thecoldpodcast.com. Michael Bon Miller composed the music for Cold, except for the guitar stuff. That was me. The KSL Podcast's team includes too many people to name here, but my special thanks to our leader, Cheryl Worsley, to our TV producer, Kira Faramond, to our radio producer, Becky Bruce, digital specialist, Josh Tilton, and my fellow podcast producers, Nina Ernest and Danielle Prager. Cold is a production of KSL Podcasts. Thank you for listening.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid.
Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.